something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
We play a brand new Alan Frew inspired game, Frew or False.
We find out what's the deal with Heather Maudlin's fruit plate in Jonathan's room.
And I talk about my decision to hang up the do-rag as J-Rock on Trailer Park Boys. It's all coming up right now on TNT.
1968, in this camp of TNT, Bod.
How are you feeling, Bod? You had to take a knee on Sunday night news talk show. What happened to you?
Well, there was a flu buggage happening around the house here.
No.
And it finally caught me down, and I was Sunday night. It wasn't, or Sunday afternoon. It was brutal.
Having a little trouble down south?
A little bit of gurgle-itch.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do, and it's not a great feeling, is it?
It is not. It isn't at all. It was just one of those, like, I had to shut her down for the day and just kind of sit down and relax and try and let it pass.
Although maybe it's just your body tapping you on the shoulder saying, you need to just relax a little bit, bud.
It sure is. Let me pass, is what it was saying.
The human body is unbelievable.
I know.
Think about the fact that you eat some tainted bacon, and within moments, everybody working in your body is like, all right, guys, let's get this out. We need to push this out.
Yeah, push it back.
It's pretty incredible.
It's the best. So we got we have some good jams from 68.
What was going on in 68? 67 was so good. Like, is 68 going to be as good?
It's even better because the birth of, I don't know, albums started to get more crazy. Like, you had Sgt. Pepper's and then you had Hendrix on the scene and Cream, and there was just a lot of, like, performance rock was starting to be born.
It's getting good. I'm looking forward to the years when we were actually on the planet, because it's cute to think of us as just little guys.
Yeah.
At the time that some of this music was coming up, I was born in 72, so we're getting there. A few more weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we went from the birth, which was on the last, well, 66, I would say, was the birth recording wise with, like, Pet Sounds, and then 67 would be Sgt. Pepper's, and then we're into the era of where, you know, the I don't have to say the Beatles, but possibly one of the best songs of all time, maybe my favorite song of all time, came out in 1968.
What is it?
Good old Otis Redding, Bod, Sitting on the Dock of the
That's
Bay.
That's a good song.
The sad thing, it was released just a few weeks after he died.
Was it really?
Yeah, in the plane crash. Imagine that. Like, it was just about to blow up. And he was the all-time dude. He could sing and dance, and his band was great. He wrote great songs. He wrote great horn parts. Like, so much depth.
So was this his biggest song?
Yeah, but again, it was early in his career. He died, right? But this probably would, I would say. Respect is pretty big, too.
It's so evocative, though, this vocal performance.
Oh, I know.
Like, it's full of hurt.
Yeah. It's got that vibe of things ain't going so good, but I'll be all right.
It's a great tune. That was 68. I would have guessed that was earlier.
Yeah, it's a solid, solid jam.
Solid jam. What else was going on musically in 1968?
Well, we could dip into some Canadianity, the births.
Let's do it.
Of Canadianity and rock.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Maestro.
What a jam.
Have you heard Maestro's version of this song?
Of course.
It's great. You know, to this day, if I'm feeling a little low energy or something, Maestro's version of this song can get me picked right up.
For sure. I would agree. There's, well, I think this was their first big hit, right, in the States.
Did you see someone sent us a picture of Burton Cummings wearing a Burton Cummings t-shirt?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. There's so much to love about it.
I know. Well, all the classic interviews, right? That's always the same stuff. It's like him promoting his own deal.
Like, I have a Street Sense t-shirt and I have a couple Jonovision t-shirts, which sometimes I think I should wear as a joke because they're almost retro now. But, and the odd time I'll wear a Taggart and Torrance shirt because I love them. But Remember the rule of Rock Bandery, that if you're spotted wearing your lanyard outside the venue, you have to buy everyone and the whole crew around? That's it, right?
The lanyard of what?
Of like the rock show, the tour that you're on.
Well, sometimes you have to have it on, though.
If you're going to like an after party or something. But you don't want to be...
Oh, of course. Yes,
you don't want to be a Boston Pizza with your tour lanyard on.
No. I thought you were talking about in the venue. No, absolutely.
Have you ever worn an OLP t-shirt?
Never.
Never ever?
Never once.
Have you ever bought an OLP record?
For other people, yes.
Have you?
Yeah.
You have to buy them?
Well, I've been out. If someone said, or if I wanted to give somebody something, an album, or if they didn't know something, as if, you know, like if you meet family, friends, and stuff, and they're like, oh, I don't know it. It's like, you don't want them to go, you got to go buy one.
Right.
You know what I mean? You just buy one. Here's a good representation of it, just to, because they're into it, but you don't want them to throw down.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah,
I probably bought some Trailer Park Boys like box sets in the early days.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you're not home or you can't get them from shipped in, or like I personally, like, you have to go buy them. I don't get like a big unlimited stack because the Sony deal has passed, and unless you ask nicely through the label, I'm sure that could happen. But generally, you got to go get them anyway. So. I don't have most of the records.
That's interesting. I haven't watched season 9 or 10 of Trailer Park. Look, I haven't watched them on the Netflix.
There you go.
But it's almost like the potty, like people will make a reference to, remember when you said this, or remember this character?
Oh, yeah. It goes by.
You know, I've been thinking we should maybe do at some point soon an all-request episode. Because of the shape-shifting nature of this pod that will kind of do something for a few weeks and then not do it again, there are things that people really like the top fives or,
for sure.
You know, certain games that we've played, like Gang Yes or Gang No or Stephen Hawking Talking.
I listen to the podcast just for a laugh myself because the Bernie stuff or whatever, I can't not have to hear it.
Isn't that ridiculous? People love Bernie and Gord. They love the dynamic. It's like Perfect Strangers.
Totally. But he's, you know, Bernie's always working and Gord just popping in to bug him.
And every song that I hear now, I think, how would that sound as Gord singing it to Bernie? Like every single song that comes on the radio. I was thinking another alt version of, we're going to reveal the winners of our TNT cover band contest. We could also do a drag queen names version of that contest.
That would be great. Remember this jam in 1968, bud? Black Day in July, Gordy? Yeah. Hey, Gordy, ever think of doing a protest number? Protest numbers are hot right now.
I wonder if this was Bruce Coburn's first co-write, because it sounds like a Coburn tune. I wonder if it was his like test to get represented by Bernie.
Gordy? Well, he wrote it.
Gordy wrote it, but it sounds, it's more Coburn-y, isn't it?
Sounds Brucey. But this is probably, well, think about who do you think was Bruce's big influence back then?
Gordy.
Yeah. Gordy even influenced Dylan. Like, even Dylan himself has admitted to trying to write songs like Gordon Lightfoot.
Is that true?
Yeah, definitely.
Black Day in July was written about the Detroit riot in 1967.
Yes. Just crushing it on all fronts. Just starting out. Gordy saying, I got this serious number. How am I going to get it out?
But it is, like, more political than most of his stuff. But absolutely. I guess that was the time. Maybe things were a little heated in 68.
Yeah, well, remember last we played the Buffalo Springfield Jam.
Yep.
I mean, Ohio is huge in that regard. And this is probably, like, that was the time, though. It was crazy. It's not that different than where we're at now in terms of...
That's the crazy thing.
The amount of people that are upset with how things are going around the world and just the conflicts that are erupting constantly everywhere. And it's like they had back then the Cold War concerns, and now it's our concerns are basically the same thing. Like, if there's enough nutcases that there could be nukes flying around again. The idea of that.
That's bananas.
Remember in the 80s? Remember the early 80s and the Reagan days? All those movies about nuclear holocausts?
Yeah, totally. And now it's that little mask in North Korea.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Dennis Rodman has that relationship on lock.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like a terrible movie.
What do you think they do?
Dennis Rodman. Like, North America is under siege, and Dennis Rodman is on the front lines.
Yeah. Same thing for Lionel Richie in the Middle East.
Yeah.
He's like the Dennis Rodman.
Ballerina girl. You are so lovely.
How about this 1968 jam? You ready for this one?
Yes. Oh,
hold on a second. I don't want to screw it up. Don't screw it up, Jerry. There we go. Canadianity. Good old Steppenwolf.
That was the first song that we paid to license on Street Sense.
Really?
Yeah, we're doing some motorcycle thing. And we actually licensed that song, and I didn't even know that you could pay money to get the rights to a song. And it just elevated the scene.
Oh, for sure. Imagine, eh? All of a sudden you feel like Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper.
Even though we're in Studio One on Bell Road in Halifax with a wind machine and bugs and dust in our teeth, it was still...
Let's go camping and get beat up by gang bangers.
This song could get you pretty fired up.
Yeah. I remember one time I was with my cousin and we were going to work. Remember I was selling those fake shirts downtown?
Yeah, from Ecuador.
Yeah. I just remember waking up one morning, like he was asleep and I was asleep, and it was like 6:30 on a Saturday to go hit Young and Dundas. And it just like, it just... turned on to Exploding Despair, that one spark, and we both woke up like laughing our heads off. It was so perfect. Exploding Despair, but just big screaming. Like, you know, the first morning when you gotta get up and the super loud alarm blast.
I love the spirit behind having to get up at 6:30 in the morning to go sell Ecuadorian shirts. Like, nobody's going to be downtown at 8 looking for Ecuadorian shirts.
No,
but
you
want to go stake your place.
Yeah, you want to stake your place because it's going to be a big day. I remember he'd make sometimes thousands of dollars on Saturdays.
Would he really?
Yep.
Is that when those during patchouli-wearing hoodie things were a big deal?
Well, it wasn't just the Ecuadorian jerseys. It was also the fake, like, Hugo Boss and the fake Ralph Lauren's.
Oh, so he had the market cornered.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He wasn't just outfitting extras in the video for Two Princes.
Yeah, and there'd be, you know, he'd pay, like, 3 tickets every day because cops would come by and give him a fine for selling shirts on the corner. You're not allowed. So it was just, like, a big wrestling match between the police and dealing with the drunk creeps and the crazy guys on the street. One time I had $1,000 in my pocket and from working, and I went to this record store. I went to Sam's, the old classic Sam's. Right there. And I wanted to buy an album, like a Coltrane record or something like that, like a classic Elvin album. And I went to the store and looked at it, and then I went back, gave Elliot all my money, like everything that I had in my pants. And I went back to the record store just to go look at some more records. And I got you know, and it swarmed on the street, where you get pulled into like a store lobby and like they all come around you and start going around in your pockets and everything, like eight dudes.
What?
Yeah. Like giving you the shoves and then start going into your pockets and everything, your socks, take your shoes off.
What?
I had brutal clothes, like, and nothing in my pants, and I was just being calm the whole time, like, guys, I got nothing. But like, if they would have done that to me the first time,
with the thousy,
with $1,100 or whatever in my pocket, that would have been, I don't know what, you know, there would have been just more of a, I would try to run or try to get away, you know what I mean? But yeah,
man, there's no better feeling than when something like that's going down than knowing you're good. Like, I have no money. Like, you can search me all over. I got nothing.
I had nothing, and I could tell they weren't gonna beat me up or knife me or something with that, and I was being completely honest. So yeah, it was intense though.
Wow, that's a lot of money too.
Yeah, it was. That was like 1991 or something.
So today that would be over $2 million.
Yeah, it would be about, yeah,
with inflation,
750 to, yeah.
I remember how Colin James rolling with a big nut. What did you call it?
$20,000 a month nut.
Yeah,
back in the day.
Yeah. How Colin James nut is this? I took my street sense money, I got $1,000 bill at the Royal Bank on Spring Garden Road, and went to buy a bed. And
for $1,100.
Yeah, it was like a little more than $1,000, but I really wanted to have $1,000 bill. I didn't even know they made such a thing.
I've never even held $1,000 or seen one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do they still make them?
It's a great question. I don't know, but I haven't seen one since. Although. Kidding. Really, it's cooler if you have a big fat wad of 20s.
Wow.
Than $1,000 bill.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
$1,000. Yeah, no, thank the Lord I wasn't killed, because that would have been horrifying.
Well, that's a lot of money. So I don't understand. Was that the business's income? That was not what you personally made.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Yeah, it was what the take for the day.
Yeah,
how about this jam? 68.
Well, you know. The Queen is on the $1,000 bill.
White album. Nice.
$1,000. It was made in 1988, and then they reissued it in 2000 something.
Good times on this jam. I would have liked to have been in the fly on the wall when that was going on.
Also a good tune, and such a different sound.
How about this other jam on this record? This was the number one song of the whole year. Oh, this is not it. Therefore, here we go. Oh, it's got the block.
What happened?
Here we go.
Yeah.
Thought it had the old YouTube blockers.
And make it better. Did I ever tell you about UPEI Summer Music Camp in 1978?
Sounds pretty good.
I was like 78, 79. I was 6 or 7 years old, and I'd been playing classical guitar for a couple years. Maybe I was 8. Maybe it was like 1980. And I went to UPEI Summer Music Camp, and you had to be 12 to get in. But they let me in because I'd been playing my instrument for a few years.
You'd been jamming.
And I was studying classical guitar, and most of the folks were playing flute or, you know, introduction to drums or whatever.
Yeah.
And every night they'd have dances, and I would DJ because I wasn't trying to get busy with anybody. I was 8.
Yeah.
And so when they'd say, like, the counselors would say, one more song, this is the last song. As Hey Jude got to the end, they'd say, put it back to the start. And I was like, no, that's not.
No, they wouldn't get into the jam?
No, they wanted me to put it back to the start so they could play the whole song again so they could get their perv on even longer. But
oh.
I was such a straight shooting kid that I was like, no, they said one more song. And they were like, dude, quick, just put it back to the start. No, you can put it back to the start yourself.
They're getting into things.
I didn't understand what getting into things meant to them. But I had no dog in the hunt. I didn't care.
Classic.
What a nerd.
If you watch this video, the live, well, it's not live, it's some kind of live version of it, miming perhaps, but there's a guy right beside Ringo with the glasses, this kid, towards the end, when they're all there, there's a huge crowd of people. This one kid looks exactly like I did in 1997.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you were superimposed.
Like literally, like I think he makes an appearance around 4:40 if you look at the YouTube clip.
Fun.
Do you have a computer there?
Yeah.
Can you go to Hey Jude by the Beatles?
Yeah. I'm sure there's only one link.
It's on Vivo. And you go right to 4:40. And then you'll be like, whoa.
It's uncanny?
Yes. Yes, you have to do it.
Oh my gosh, I'm doing it right now.
It's worth the technical side notes.
Hey, what do you think of Axl singing with AC/DC?
I don't know. I mean, I always thought it was tough to sing for him with Guns N' Roses. I didn't think he would be able to do it, but I heard he's doing fine.
I heard he crushed it too. Yeah, by all the people wearing like lace sundresses that go to Coachella. Yeah,
and taped flowers to their heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if he can do it, like I figured the issue was just him as like kind of being a bit of a mess, but he seems to be doing all right.
But it's a full on tour, right?
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. Well, no, he's finishing 10 shows with.
Oh, is he?
AC/DC, yeah. The ones that they had to cancel.
So the first night that he's out with Guns N' Roses, he breaks his ankle on stage? Dave Grohl style?
Yeah, and then he's in the Dave Grohl broken leg chair.
Standby.
Rosie with Angus.
How am I getting to 4? What'd you say, 4:40?
Okay. Yeah, hold on. Let's take a break and then come right back with this 4:40 Hey Jude moment.
We'll be right back.
Fucking right, eh?
Okay, so are you there, Jonathan? We're back.
I'm at six. I'm at 4:32, 4:33. Yeah, go wait for
bring
it.
Bring it to 4:40, and then watch out. It's like I'm there. It's like I totally was brought in from like. 22-year-old
me. It's so weird.
It's scary. It even scares me.
It's uncanny.
The way he's moving around and clapping and he's right beside Ringo because that's where I would totally be.
Wow. Are you sure it's not you?
I know. I believe in time travel.
Did they? Oh my gosh, look at this kid.
We have to have some... Hey, D&D Colin, people,
I know you play the drums. Why don't you come to our video?
I'm glad you like the drums.
Hey, Ringo, have you found someone to stand beside you in the video? Yeah, I found Jeremy Taggart. He likes the drums.
He's a brilliant lad.
It's wild, man. It's not even like, oh yeah, if you squint, there's kind of a passing resemblance.
No, no.
It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Really I guess they're funny. School children, are they?
I don't know. I think so. It looks like, yeah, definitely, because some of them have uniforms on.
That is wild.
He just came up the street from Oxford.
Pass me the Devon clotted cream and a penguin. I fancy a drink.
1968.
Hold my sticks, Jeremy.
We're in the old my sticks.
What movie is that? My sticks.
Oh, that wasn't that Waiting for Guffman, where he's getting ready to play Henry Higgins, and he says they don't pronounce their H's. Hello, I'm Henry Higgins. The worst accent ever.
Oh man.
Let's get to the winners of our TNT cover band contest because there were some great entries.
There is. There were some unbelievable entries.
And I think we should get, like, there should be honorable mentions. Let's work backwards. Here's what I did. I searched the hashtag TNT.
Sure you don't want to hear a couple more 68 jams?
Oh, do you have more?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, keep them coming, bud.
We have more Canadianity.
Let's hear it.
See if you remember this jam. I'm sure we've all sung it in school at some point. The Unicorn Jam song. The Irish Rovers.
I just played this for my kids on Sunday.
Yeah. 68, bud.
Was it really?
was the unicorn.
It was green alligators
and long neck geese, a humpy black camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats.
Listen to how he says born.
What's that?
The way he says born.
Oh, yeah.
And sure as you're born!
They were actually from Ireland, but moved to Canada when as kids in the 63. So this is full-on done in Canada, Canadianity.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because their accents were so thick.
Yeah. Well, they're apparently like 20 or something when they moved to... 16-year-old George Millar and 23-year-old Jimmy Ferguson... They're in Toronto already, so I guess their parents brought them there when they were kids. They were the Miller kids in Ireland.
My kids have
immigrated.
They have those like it's like a horse on a stick, but it's a unicorn on a stick. So I was like, oh, I remember there's a song with the word unicorn in it. So I played them that song, and they loved the song. And they were like, well, I wonder what other songs they do. And then I played Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah,
because it came on the YouTube right afterwards.
Yep.
And that's a trip.
It is.
And they were kind of curious as to what that was about.
Peter, Paul, and Mary,
I didn't feel
I
could explain it.
Yeah.
But that's a similar era.
What's that?
That's a similar era for sure.
It is. Here's another pretty good jam from 68 that you may or may not remember. A little Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Sure.
How about this jam? This might be one of their best songs, if not the best. Stones.
It's a great lick.
Pretty classic. It is.
Doodle
and they
down,
still kill it down. When they play this one. At least they did when I got to see it when we opened for them in Moncton.
And how was it?
When Charlie's on, the band's killer, and when Charlie's off, things aren't good.
That's why, is he off sometimes?
I guess he has bad days, yeah. He's not 20.
No, he's not.
He sure isn't. How about the last one I got for you today? And there's obviously dozens more. We could go on for weeks, but I like me some Sly and the Family Stone. And this was a great... bridge to kind of dance music and just rhythm music that got going from here on out. You know, James Brown was just kicking it, but Sly and the Family Stone were probably one of the best ever.
What an interesting time.
No kidding. And this guy screwed up his career by doing the free bass.
What does that mean?
Smoking cocaine.
Oh, you mean literally freebasing?
Freebasing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Sly Stone really blew himself up. And to the point of where he's living in like a trailer in L.A. Apparently he just got a bunch of money, though.
So Sly's still with us?
Settlement. Yeah. Yeah, he was a mess and a continued mess for decades.
But it seems like a lot of those guys who were pickled are fine.
I know, it's bizarre.
Like, preserved somehow.
You'd think Keith Richards would have been dead 10 times already.
Thanks for the tour through 1968, bud. I enjoyed that immensely.
Yeah, let's roll to this contest.
So we asked people to come up with the best Canadianity cover band, and there are so many great entries. Obviously, it's two things. It's one, it's a clever name of a cover band, and two is kind of the poster and package in which you present it.
Yes.
So why don't I read through a bunch of them, and then maybe we'll narrow it down to three.
Love it.
This one is a verbal one. There's no poster, but it's Milli Vanilli in honor of Gino Vanelli. Yes.
That was a good one.
Clever.
Very funny.
Mr. Magic.
That's one of the best.
It's really strong, especially bonus points for it's at Thirsty's, which is the bar in Cavendish where I used to work. So it's geographically, like the math checks out. Mr. Magic works not far away from there. The poster's good. It has like a...
He's got the magic keyboard going on.
Yep. It has like a sepia tone, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So I think that's a contender.
Yes, I would say so for sure.
Brian, who's a really funny guy, sent us Newfie and the Blowfish. Pretty funny. High concept. The Screech Shed.
He went into the Photoshop big time.
Flurry, this is from Dan Colangelo. Flurry, the best snow cover band in Canada. And it's a picture of you in a pageboy hat.
Yeah, that was pretty
solid. Live at the Cabaret in Belleville. Solid.
Yeah.
Someone sent us a picture of Shania Twain.
Yeah.
Still
on the road, still hammering out the hits.
Yeah. Ray, who sent us Mr. Magic, also sent Cover Girl, performing the songs of Loverboy. It's good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This is kind of a ooh thinker. Dominic sent us Rash. They perform in Banff. Barf.
And that would be Rush tribute.
Yeah. Mixed with STDs, I think.
I would assume, yeah.
Appearing at Popular Girl, Trapper, Canada's hardest working fur trading rock band. So it's kind of a Trooper parody, but Trapper. Appearing at Popular Girl, that's very high concept.
That's up there.
Put a lot of thought into that.
Yes.
B-Day Mask sent us Mock Seafruvis, Tom Mockren, Moxley Workman, Kim Mockchel, and the Mockfits. That's like, for volume, that's really, really good.
Definitely. It's solid effort.
No posters, but solid. Nuba.
That was great.
Great. I forgot it's about Luba. Nuba. Billy Semi-Talent from Livel. Nice. She'll Pass Jordan. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I Mother Girth.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This is high concept too. Gord's in there. You and I are in there. And they're...
Isn't Engineer Jim's
portly
in there?
Folks. Yeah, it's like a real dog's breakfast. Makes me uncomfortable to look at. It's from Dale Irving, but it's great. I Mother Girth. Deaf from Above. Blackie and the Rodeo Clones. That's from musician Stephen Fearing. Great musician.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Sample Plan.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
The Perfect Tour.
Yeah. Honeymoon Muddit.
That's great.
From Aaron.
Honeymoon Muddit.
Yep.
that's good.
The Guess Why from Jason Williams. Yeah. There are a lot of good ones, like ACDC. That's from Lisa, but EHACDC.
That's cool.
So many. Jerry Mercer, who won our last contest, sent in the Foo Fighters. Good one.
That one's pretty funny with me and you.
Platinum Con, live at Folsom Prism. This one has got to be a contender. Michael Frederick sent Arcade Friars. And again, like so good high concept, picture. But imagine the faces of Arcade Fire on a bunch of friars.
With the hairdos.
Nelson Gordon's Lightfoot, funny. Yeah. Nearly Neil is a real one. Neil Diamond Cover Band. Practically Blonde by Jason Rees has to be in the conversation.
That's a contender for
because
sure.
It's you, me, Jay, and Dan on the faces of Platinum Blonde. The album is called Winnipeg Shores, and it's at the Good Times Bar and Grill in The Paw, Manitoba. Brought to you in part by 88.5 The Imp.
Nice. Like,
so it's so layered.
So much going on there.
Plus, Good Times is THYMES.
Yeah.
I think that's my winner. What do you think?
The way that he does the picture, the faces, and I've been thinking about that one from the beginning.
I know.
I would agree with you. So yeah.
Jason Rees, congratulations. He's our winner.
Information.
But there's
really
also Matthew Just As Good Band. That's really funny too for a cover band. The Just As Good Band, Matthew Just As Good Band. And then Cornrow Heart, Sunglass Asses at Nizite.
Great stuff.
Presented by 99.4 The Cock. So what do we do? Jason Rees wins. But
you're covering your mouth there on the phone there, bud.
Oh, am I? Sorry. Jason Rees wins. But Cornrow Heart was also Jason Rees. So that's easy. He's a double winner.
Cornrow Heart is, yes.
Cornrow Heart is a good one. So Jason Rees won. Congratulations, Jason. Should we say Arcade Friars? For creativity gets an honorable mention.
Yes.
And there was one more that I think we both agreed with. Is it I Mother Girth?
I Mother Girth, I'd say, was pretty classic.
Dale Irving, yep. And Mr. Magic.
Mr. Magic needs some.
It's spectacular. So one winner, three runners up. We'll be in touch after this podcast and get your mailing information. We'll send you out some BOD merch. But thanks to all of you for participating, because it's really fun when everybody gets behind a contest.
It really is.
And maybe we should do it with Canadian drag queens.
We should do it, yes.
So why don't we take a break on TNT 68, and we'll be right back with more after this.
And you know, Santa, the question is, have you ever killed a man?
Hey, we're back.
Welcome back, bud.
Yeah.
In podcast time, it's only been a few seconds, but in reality, it's been a day.
Yes.
A day indeed. In fact, I'm in Toronto, Ontario now, in a hotel. And in typical...
And I'm in Richmond Hill, just up north of you.
I know, it's not even a long-distance call.
Canadianity style. We're still in their own place.
But in typical me fashion, I checked into my room at this hotel, and there's a fruit plate. And I thought, well, that's nice. It's a nice gesture of the hotel to leave a fruit plate. And I see that there's a little card, and then they left a card beside the fruit plate. I'm like, that's nice. Oh, they left a card. Except the card is addressed to Heather Maudlin. I am in Heather Maudlin's room, or somewhere Heather Maudlin sitting in her new room going, they usually give me a fruit plate.
No, she might be there in a half an hour, you mean.
Maybe. When, should I open the card?
If you fall asleep. Yeah, open the card. Then you can maybe get to the bottom of it.
Oh, it's just a printed thing. Dear Heather Maudlin, thank you for selecting this hotel for your stay. It's just RoboCard. Enjoy and best regards from the front office manager here at the hotel. Heather Maudlin, if you're listening, someone knows her. Maybe somebody knows Heather Maudlin, knows why she's in town. But Heather, if you hear this, I have your tangerine, banana, and pear, and carbonated spring water here.
Perhaps it's a fitness instructor in town.
Should I crush convention. It?
Of course.
Like, the pear is oddly rotund, but it looks appetizing.
The pear looks big?
Yeah.
One of those, like, it's giant, like,
it's an apple-shaped
ones.
Pear.
Crush it.
But it looks ripe, and the banana is ripe. Like, everything's ready to go.
You know what? Let's do a test and see if each are fresh right now.
The pear is chalky, bud. Oh, the pear is chalky.
A little waxy.
Yeah, she's a little waxy.
Okay.
The banana.
Let's move on to the banana.
Do you know that humans are the only ones that eat bananas, open bananas from what we call the top?
The top. Yeah, the chimps crush the bottom and then it flies off no sweat every time.
Oh, the banana's tight, Heather.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah, it's tight.
Okay. So
banana's
maybe,
tight.
Yeah, so...
And the tangerine feels pretty ripe. Stand by. Do you...
Is it... How big is it? Is it a plentiful big, kind of like a hockey... Like a road hockey ball size?
It's like a Titleist and a half.
Okay, so it's a
small... It's a little guy, but he's ripe. Just right. Peeling him up. Do you jam a finger through the bottom and then peel?
For the, do I check its oil, like, under the giant?
Yeah, do you give it a little how's your father before you get right into things?
No. If there's, sometimes you feel there's a big center there, so you can push down, and you get a good hack out of the peel.
This fruit plate is on point, y'all.
Really? So are you the tangerine dope?
I hope Heather doesn't have some dietary restrictions in which she requires a fruit plate.
There's probably a Whole Foods around the corner.
She's calling down to the front desk, pissed. Where's my fruit plate? I stay here every week.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a game called Fru or False.
Fru or False?
Like Alan Fru from Glass Tiger. Yeah. And the rules are very simple. I will read a Fru or False statement, and you have to guess if it's Fru or False.
This is perfect.
But it's important to note that in doing research, I've been listening to Glass Tiger tunes, and I did some research about the Fru himself. He's a bud. Alan Fru has done a lot of work to raise money for a lot of charities. He's a very selfless guy. Yeah. And we also know that he had some medical challenges this year, but it sounds like he's come out the other side of it in good fashion, which is good news.
Yeah. He's still performing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's still performing.
Everything's good there.
Yeah, and I'm
still killing it.
I actually learned a lot about him. I don't want to give it away because some of them are true or false yeah, questions. Okay. But
let's get into her.
We can debrief about the fru after we get going. So should I set the mood with a glass Tiger Jam?
Oh, that would be fantastic. Here you go. Let's go. Here we go. True or false with music. I love it.
And now, true or false with Jeremy Taggart. I don't know why there's an Irish voiceover Irish. Guy. And now, true or false with Jeremy Taggart. My song, remember?
Okay. Simon's son.
True or false? Alan Frew has toured with Fleetwood Mac.
I would say Frew.
That is Frew. One point. True or false? Alan Frew has a brown belt in judo. I debated jiu-jitsu. That's false.
Oh, I was going to say Frew.
Were you?
I could see him throwing a guy over his shoulder. Giving a guy an Alan Doyle across the room.
I tried to go with brown because I thought black would be too like, well, no, that's false. But brown is plausible.
Brown, isn't and I that had, like, that's like pretty deep though. Brown's right before black.
I know, but he didn't get to black. I thought brown might throw you off the scent, and I had jiu-jitsu, but then I softened it to waited. Judo.
You had low confidence in the question. You blew yourself up.
All right, here's a new jam for the next true or false question. Yeah. Do you know this one? When I get home.
Is that my town?
When I get home. Okay, true or false?
Oh, someday? Yeah. Someday, jamming.
Alan Frew co-wrote, I Believe, CTV's theme song for the Vancouver Olympics. True or false?
Frew.
That's Frew. He also wrote the theme song for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's called, like, Feel the Burn or something.
That's right. I remember
it's
that.
It's called Feel the Burn. Frew or false? Alan Frew was born in Scotland. It might be a trick question. And you have to answer in a Scottish accent. True or false?
Ach no, I was born in Halliburton.
Halliburton. Halliburton Cummings. True or false?
Okay.
What do you think?
Oh, I'm going to say that's Frew.
That is Frew. Frew, Frew or false? Let me get another jam going. It's a good jam. True or false? Alan Frew was born in 1956.
Frew?
Frew.
Yeah.
In his spare time, Alan Frew is an avid bird watcher.
You're looking one, taking a walk through the park, and you see him behind a bush with binoculars.
He's gonna walk through the park.
What are you doing behind that bush? I'm just having a look at the magpie.
That's a red bell right there. True or false, bird watcher?
True.
That's false, he Bob. Is. I made that up.
Oh.
Avid
bird watcher.
Because I think I used badminton for something else. All right, here goes another song. Old Diamond Sun has to burn. Gord should do this for Bernie.
Old Diamond Sun has to burn me.
He's like pulling, just rubbing his head.
Alan Frew
is named after Alan Alda. True or false?
No chance. That's a false, but it's classic.
Is it true or it's false? You think it's false?
It's false. Yeah.
You're right, oh my god.
I think he's supposed to say it's
no, here we go.
True and go on.
I had to make it rhyme. Oh, are we never to learny? Oh, are we never to learny?
He grabs a square and puts it in his mouth. And Bernie's like, oh, him? Okay, they're so good.
He doesn't want to go with it, but it tastes so good he can't help
he's like,
it.
Oh, he's going to have that sugary goodness. The buttery goodness.
Who wants some butterfly corn laughter? Who's the Bernie in the room? Who's the Bernie in the room?
I'll give you the Nanaimo bar.
There was a square in this old mouth that Bernie liked to eat.
True or false is my favorite game ever.
How about, like, if they're having a fight and Gore threatens never to bring him any more squares?
But it's a threat that actually works. Bernie's like, all right,
yeah, that's like, it's like more than anything.
True or false?
You say goodbye to those squares, you bastard.
So, Alan Frew wrote the song for the Leafs.
He already told me that.
I know, but do you know that song?
I don't know if I know it. I heard that he did it.
The song. It's called Free to Be, Go Leafs Go. Have you heard it?
No.
There it is.
Wow.
It's called Goo Leafs Goo.
No.
Goo Leafs Goo.
Go Leafs Goo.
I can't stop talking into this pear, bud.
Oh, you're crushing that still?
Yeah. Should we Google Heather Maudlin?
Maybe. Yeah.
Like maybe we can find her LinkedIn or something and I could send her a message.
You can grab meet her at the Cactus Club and give her some fruit.
Oh my gosh, she's from Newfoundland. She has 25 years of experience in residential care. She has a BA in psychology and a master's in child development. Crazy.
In town for conference.
I found her LinkedIn profile. I feel like we should see this thing through. Well, the spelling of her last name is not traditional.
It's not like Sammy Maudlin.
I feel like I need to make good on this fruit plate. That's so crazy. The internet's crazy.
It is.
Do you ever Google yourself, sure bud?
What's that?
Do you ever Google yourself?
No. Not unless somebody said something.
Tell the truth. You've never Googled yourself?
No, I'm not a Googler. Because you use anti-Google.
Because you use a different search engine or because you don't want to read the hype?
Well, I can't say I've had to find pictures for press or whatever. Do you have a picture of this or that? So I've looked for that, but there's not much. I don't know. Maybe there is some good gossip.
About you on the internet?
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe there is. Maybe I bet there are a lot of like drum forums where guys are like, I wonder what kind of toms he uses.
Probably.
Can a good drummer play on a bad kit and make it wail?
Sure. You're keeping beats.
But I always wonder that. So like
I've seen guys on great kits that sound terrible.
Right. You know? So you could play a Muppet from an animal from the Muppets drum set and make it sound good.
Well, the beat would be good. I can't speak for the exact tones of the things, but that, you know, the beat doesn't change.
If you're playing a festival, do you use your kit or there's a kit and you just bring like your hi-hats or something?
No, you bring your own. Unless it's something rare, you always have your own stuff.
Like at the Junos, you'd be playing your own drum kit.
Yes, unless, like, I was somewhere where I could get something exactly the same, you know?
Right.
If I had, like, a gig the next day somewhere far away.
Right. I guess you can't ship a set of drums, can you?
Yeah, and you'd have, well, there was a point when I toured, I had, with OLP, like a B-rig, too.
What's a B-rig?
Like your another kit, the same kit.
So you could leapfrog kits? Like this one's at the gig today, the other one's going to the gig tomorrow where we fly?
Yeah, sometimes you couldn't make it to one place, so you would send the other kit.
That's so rock and roll, bud.
And then fly back to the other kit.
Do guitar players carry their guitars on the plane, though? Like, they wouldn't want to...
Yeah. Yeah. They usually, yeah. But, I mean, there's always... Most things are replaced, like, have backups.
I'm going to tell you something.
I got into the habit of buying two of everything.
I haven't felt more like a pest than I felt when I was eyeballing Jim Cuddy's Gibsons, remember?
Oh, yeah, those were nice. And then you got the eyeball from his tech, though.
Yeah, his tech. It wasn't Jim. Jim's a lovely dude in my limited experience around him. But his tech didn't wasn't know who messing.
You were at all. He was like, he gave you the classic tech bit.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be there. Like, I was just
a kid.
I was admiring them from a distance. But they're beautiful guitars, the 335s.
Yeah, and they're all old, too. Very old, nice, like, beautiful. Those things are nuts.
They sure are.
All have great stuff.
And, like, I'm not just going to have one. I'll have four of them in case something happens to one.
I almost popped a gasket since I was sick on the weekend from that that Alan Frew game.
So, what, you had some lung challenges? Because it sounds like you have a bit of a bark there, bud.
Yeah, no, it was a little bit of, like, a flu-y cold that kind of turned into a deep bronch. Bronchial cough, you know, one of those.
Yeah,
it's kind of that's all that stuck around is the Wilfred Brimley cough.
Let's do this. Let's take a break on TNT, and when we come back, we'll talk about breaking news in the TPB universe. I've decided to leave the show after 10 seasons, and we'll talk a little bit about the mythology around that and what the future holds.
Cool, bud. That's a big four-part series on TNT this week.
There you go. We'll be right back.
Crunch, 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 crunch. Thanks a lot, baby. Get out of here. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. Crunch, 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 crunch.
We're back.
I always say about Trailer Park Boys that people often ask, like, how it started. Mike Clattenburg, who is the original creator of the show, worked with me at Street Sense. And we always talked like J-Rock. Because we both went to high school with guys that talked like that. And we loved the patois and we loved the sense of humor that these dudes had. And when Mike was doing a pilot with his friends Rob and JP, who went on to play Ricky and Julian, he said, you should play that character in the show. And I've said this before. The first season, every day I got in the car, I drove home and said, that's the most fun I've ever had at work. But I can't imagine anyone will watch this. And when the show started... It was, I mean, you have to remember, it was the year 2000 and The Office hadn't started and the mockumentary device wasn't widely used and the production quality was so poor that people
there
were like...
no, like, shaky camera showing, walking around, following people.
Really, the only other...
Cops was the only thing.
That's what I was going to say. Cops was the only other version of that show and this was Cops from a criminal's perspective. And the thing that I always loved about it was... Julian had the schemes and Ricky wasn't that smart and Bubbles was the moral center. Like the dynamic of the three guys was always really engaging and fun to watch and they lived in this universe. And the thing that I'm so proud of about that show is nobody ever judged Randy and Leahy. Nobody ever judged J-Rock. Nobody called Bubbles disparaging words. They just were those people and they were accepted for that. And it's kind of a beautiful message. Like the Trailer Park is a little microcosm and how when external forces threatened, they all banded together. You know, at the end of the day, Leahy and Ricky probably cared more about each other than they'd care to let on. Mm-hmm. But I always wondered, as maybe you did with the band, like, how long can this go? And you know, seasons 2 and 3, as we've talked about before, it started to blow up, thanks in part to you guys and Rush and other bands getting behind it. But I always kind of thought, like, I don't know, five seasons would be amazing. Then suddenly we're doing a movie and Ivan Reitman's producing it. I think if you've seen the first movie, it wasn't what any of us really hoped, because Ivan's take on it was different than I think what ours was. His feeling was, this is for an American audience. You should make it more like a greatest hits record, like do the jokes that you know work, that you've used already. He saw it more as a romantic comedy between Ricky and Lucy, and the boys' dynamic was kind of in a backseat. Kind of an interesting business thing at the time. He wanted it to have, like, boobs in it, because teenage boys would be renting it at Blockbuster, which wouldn't be a factor nowadays. So then we did a second movie and more seasons, and the three guys, to their credit, because they're out road banging, see how much potential the show has in all the far-flung corners of the world, and they just did a European tour and sold out Oslo and in Munich and all these places that you wouldn't even imagine, but thanks to Netflix, the show has found an audience. And every 6 months since it started, I've thought, well, that's got to be that then. And it continues to find new audiences everywhere still. But for me, you know, the first five or six seasons, I always saw J-Rock as garnish. I never saw him as the main dish. Like, of all the characters on the show, he has the potential to be the most cartoonish. And I think he works best in small doses. So despite people saying, man, you should tour or you should think about doing a spinoff, I always thought that would be too much J-Rock, and I'd rather be the character that people are like, when's he going to be back on the screen, as opposed to like, oh my God, why won't he stop talking? So
yeah,
when
it's such a, you know, it's like Latka in Taxi.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's small in doses, but it's very integral in my mind to the fabric of what the show is, for sure.
Well, and he helps round out the universe, as all the supporting characters do. And, you know, after seven seasons or whatever of, like, driving up and dissing Randy and driving away, it's really fun, but you kind of wonder, what else is there? So then, in season nine, the guys, to their credit, really rolled the dice. There was no broadcaster, there was no Netflix when they made season eight. They paid for it themselves. It was really a Hail Mary, and then the Netflix deal came in. And that is born only out of their sheer will and belief in the fact that, you know, there continues to be an audience for the show, and they're absolutely right on that. So season nine, J-Rock suddenly had a kid. And I felt like I was in the writer's room that year, and I felt like that was really new turf for me, because it was what I was going through in my life, and it was fun for J-Rock to have this other gear. Like, suddenly he's trying to be ABC after school special dad, but confronted by this little hustler who's actually harder than J-Rock will ever be. And I thought that presented some really fun comedic opportunities. Then in season 10, which is one that just dropped, J-Rock went to Mexico, as we've discussed, and came back with a wife and an accent, and was trying to kind of manage being married and keep this facade of being Spanish in front of his new wife, but not be whack in front of his kid. And that was all really fun to play. And it felt like with the Spanish thing, it was high risk.
What's funny is almost like he, if you think of the character and like not speaking Spanish, but like talking like Spanish, is almost like him adopting the language.
Well, it's
as much, that's as like as he thinks he's got it in that regard.
It's, you know, a total buy for me, because in the Christmas special, which was a prequel, J-Rock was grunge. So we kind of had established that he was always looking for a personality to scotch tape onto himself, because he didn't really know who he was. So when we first had the notion, it was just that J-Rock came back from Mexico with an accent, and it begs the question, like, why wouldn't Julian just say, J-Rock, what are you doing? Stop talking like that. When we cracked the nut that he was trying to keep up appearances in front of his new wife, that was actually plausible, but funny. But it was high risk. Like, people don't really like a lot of change on that show. When you take the guys out of the park, they don't like it. When you bring new blood in, people sometimes buck against it. So I was so happy with the way that season 10 was received. As far as J-Rock goes, and people seem to really dig the Spanish thing. Buds liked that it was like a tip of the hat to Salvador, which was really cool. And so when you start to think, like, what's next for the character, it's hard to imagine forging any new ground.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that's always, you know, served me well, or I've been lucky timing-wise, is at the end of Jonovision, when I was kind of teen talk show guy, Trailer Park Boys came along, and that allowed audiences to imagine me in a totally different way. And towards the end of Trailer Park, then Mr. D came along, and that character was a total 182. And I think part of the challenge of having a career in this country is allowing people to imagine you in different ways. And I guess I just ultimately felt like I achieved that all I could with J-Rock. But he's been in my head and a part of my existence for so long. It's weird. Like, it's weird, but it's freeing, and it's exciting, but it's sad, and it's all the things that you might expect it would be. But the nice thing is, the people that watch the show and like it so much and have grown up with these characters have all been saying really nice, positive things, and they're happy for me, and they're thankful that, you know, I played the character as long as I did. But at a certain point, I've always just felt philosophically it's better to try to swing to the next thing before it's like, all right, you're 43 years old, you're wearing a do-rag, I'm not buying you as a wankster anymore. So I feel great about the last couple of seasons because, like I say, there was new turf, and it feels like 10's a nice round number, kind of feels like a nice way to exit, and you know, they can bring new life into the show, and you know, if the guys are right, which they certainly have been, this thing can live on, you know, as long as they want it to. Netflix has changed the game in a big way. So it was absolutely a great privilege and pleasure, as I said in my little statement, to play that guy. And I'm so thankful that people have stayed with us and with me all these years. But it feels, as hard as the decision was, it feels right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you, it's been how long since Mike Clattenburg hasn't been around?
He hasn't been around for the Netflix years. So it more than 3 years, like maybe going on 4 years. Mm-hmm. And he's a really special cat. He has, right from the time he started on Street Sense, he just had this, somebody called it like a magic fairy dust, and you'd shoot a scene and it's really funny, and then Mike would just say, let's try it again, but Randy has a bag of chips the whole time, and Ricky tried to get the chips from him.
Have you spoken to Mike since?
Only just via text in passing, and you know, like a good friend does, he just said, you know, thinking of you today, and you know, we hoed some rows together, and you know, all that stuff. But
it's kind of interesting that you can at least have some feeling of the situation with him, obviously.
Totally. Well, my friendship with him goes back 25 years, and my friendship with these guys goes back almost 20. Like, we were kids, as you were when you started the band, right? And like any relationship, that's a long time to be involved creatively with people. And you know, ultimately, I just feel pretty satisfied that I'd done all I could with the character and wanted to leave before it's like, I don't even understand what you're trying to do anymore. So there you go.
And like you said, it's different because it did feel more smaller communities, like a real family. I'm sure lots of shows that last 10 years do feel that way after a while, but...
Well, the interesting thing is the sentiment, like whatever the zeitgeist of Trailer Park Boys is, it has survived different iterations and different casting changes and new blood, and it is bigger than all of us, whatever that means. Like, there is a spirit about it, and I think it's because the fans of the show are so rabid and loyal and willing to go on these weird little journeys with us through moments that are kind of cartoony and moments that are heartwarming from time to time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's wild. It's quite an accomplishment that it has lasted as long as it has and shows no signs of slowing down. So I wish them all the very, very best in season 11, and I know it'll be hilarious.
Yeah. When do they start shooting? Is it going? It's not that far off.
I think end of May.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they shoot in Truro, so I'll see them around town. And all my friends, I mean, the crew that works on the show, it is. I mean, it's like summer camp for swearing. like everybody just sitting around outside on picnic tables trying to make each other laugh. And that's something I'll miss for sure, but it's also something I'll find in my next endeavor. It's something I found in TNT. And, you know, when the Lord closes a door, he opens a window, bot.
That's right. Thanks for stopping by TNT for this last year and 2 years and forever more.
It's been so fun. And I think
it's been a gas.
I think in
new level.
In a creative career, you're always kind of looking for the next buzz. You hear stand-ups talking about that. Like, what makes Chris Rock and Jerry Seinfeld drive downtown Manhattan on a Saturday night looking for a stage like a junkie? It's because there's just something in your blood that you're looking for the next buzz. And like I say, I think for now that's enough of J-Rock. And anxious to see what my next page term will be.
Love it.
TNT the TV show, bud.
TNT the TV show, and there's always What's Cracking with Ronnie.
I'd watch that. TNT TV. There you go. We need to start societal pressure on networks to get TNT TV going. For some reason, see it as an animated show. Like, couldn't you see Bernie tickling, or Gord tickling Bernie, putting a square in his mouth as an animated thing? Bernie, sit still, I got a square for you. Guess who just came back from Nanaimo?
to Nanaimo, Aurelia. 2 decks, fresh decks.
Oh, diamond sun has to burn it. Oh, are we ever to learn it? This week's episode has been brought to you in part by Heather Maudlin's Fruit Plate. Tags?
Yeah, is it gone?
Yeah, it's gone. Crushed.
You crushed it.
I sent you the before picture, now I'll send you the after.
Yeah.
Good chatting, bud.
Good chatting, bud. I'll talk to you soon. Maybe I'll see you downtown.
Look forward to it, bud. I'll see you at the Steak Queen, bud.
Oh, perfect.
Boom, gong, gang, gong, ding, gong, ju, bong, 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 bong,